You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Before we get started, we wanted to let you know about a free resource that we're offering, an e-booklet by Todd Adkins called Developing Your Leadership Pipeline. This booklet will help you and your church leadership team begin to formulate a leadership pipeline from concept to structure to training in your own church. To download, go to lifeway.com/churchleaders and select the free e-booklet tab at the top. Again, that's lifeway.com/churchleaders and select the free e-booklet tab, and you can download it there. Now, here's the podcast. Enjoy. Welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper, here with Todd Adkins, the Director of Leadership at Lifeway Christian Resources. Today, we have the honor of asking our 5 Leadership Questions of Bobby Gruenwald, who is on staff at Life Church. He's their innovation leader, which is a title that is not a normal one for churches, I must say. But when you look into what Bobby does as part of Life Church, it makes a little more sense. He oversees their communications, their church online, their creative media. And at a place like Life Church, where they have campuses in, I think, 7 states, there's more than 25 campuses, and then online church kind of done around the world, those roles are very important. But then the thing that he has been involved in and oversaw that has impacted probably the most people, and he can correct me if I'm wrong about this, is that he oversaw the building of the YouVersion app, which is currently used on, I think, over 180 million devices around the world.
Boom.
It's a Bible app that has Bible reading plans, devotionals. It's in hundreds of languages, hundreds of Bible versions, allows people to take notes. And then there's this interactive and community aspect to it as well, so that people can actually share what they're interacting with in Scripture with other people. So it's sort of it has a social component and a community component. So you very likely have this app on your phone, or there's a good chance you've run across it. And Bobby was responsible for leading the team that put that together. So Bobby, we're excited to talk with you today. Thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Did I get some of those numbers and stats right about? Yes.
You were close. I mean, we have, I think it's about 210 million devices now. So it's up a little
there
from.
Okay. Well, you should go yell at whoever put the information in the App Store, because I got that information straight off my iPhone about 30 minutes ago.
If it's in the App Store, it has to be true.
I am going to correct that because it hasn't been updated in the App Store. You're absolutely right, in the description. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I just went into the description. And
if you give me 5 minutes, I could take care of that right now.
Well, since you have a hard stop and we want to make sure that we have a good conversation, maybe you can take care of that a little bit later. But tell us a little bit more about yourself, about what you do at Life Church, your family, just the things that are a little bit more interesting than the bullet points that I read off.
Well, you covered quite a bit. I am married. My wife and I'll be married 20 years here in August, and we have 4 kids, ages 10 through 2, girl, boy. My wife's an accountant, so she likes everything to kind of equal out.
So you did that on purpose?
She did on purpose.
That's impressive.
And I think she delivered like all of them on their due date or really close, if not.
She's
kind of got all that sorted out. But and then before I came to work at the church, my background was in business, and I had a couple of technology companies in the 1990s. Both of them I started and sold. So I was really basically an entrepreneur in the 90s. One was a web hosting company, and the other was the largest professional wrestling website.
Are you serious?
Dead serious.
And what was the name of that site? There's a good chance that I frequented that during my junior high years.
Scoops Central.
It rings a bell.
It was beside outside of the WWF's website and the WCW or whatever it was back then. It was the largest site that was kind of independent of the actual wrestling site. So anyway, that was in the 90s. Before that, I was a Christian rapper. So I was... Christian
are you
rap.
Serious?
What name did you use?
Say what?
What name did you use? Because Gruenwald's not really a typical rapper's name, I must say.
Rob G. And the name of the band was CBE, which stood for Christ Before Everything, is what it was. So.
Rob G and CBE?
That's right.
Where did you perform? What are some of the memorable venues?
Oh man, it was one of those times where we would do festivals. I grew up in the Church of the Nazarene, and we did there's an event called Nazarene Youth Congress, which is like 5,000 kids in Phoenix one year that we were there with the Newsboys and a whole set of bands. And then, of course, we do something like that, and the next day we're like at an amusement park in Phoenix, and we're singing to people while they're standing in line for corn dogs. And so it was really like this like any band experience. You go from like feeling like you're on top of the world and everybody loves it, and the next day you're singing to crickets, you know. So it was a lot of fun. We did a lot of church, a lot of camps, a lot of, I don't know, wedding receptions. We did all kinds of stuff.
I will say that already, I mean, we're only minutes in, and this may be more interesting than the one we did with Craig. I'm not going to go there quite yet.
Yeah, but
you're setting the bar pretty high.
I mean, between rappers and wrestling, this is we're on a good roll. We're on a roll right now.
It describes what I do at the church, but it is the most eclectic job on the planet. So I, in addition to those things you mentioned, I'm involved in negotiating our real estate stuff. I'm the church treasurer. So I have all kinds of really weird, my degree's in finance. I mean, it can't get any more mixed up than what I'm describing.
I like it. Well, that would, I think, be this question I'm really excited to ask. It's always our first question, but you've kind of set the table for us pretty well. I'm excited to hear the answer to this. Who are you learning from right now?
I'm reading a book right now. It's written by Adesis, and I don't even know how to pronounce the guy's first name. But last name's Adesis, A-D-I-Z-E-S. You know that?
Jenny Catron mentioned this book recently.
Yeah.
It's about the organizational life cycles.
Absolutely. Yeah, you guys are on it. So this is the volume 2 of Managing Corporation Life Cycles. And so we're kind of going through that as a team. It's part of what we've been familiar with, that Adesis methodology, for several years now. And so we're kind of revisiting this, and this is sort of his second book on the topic. And that's, it really has to do with the different management roles in the organization and sort of the different life cycles of an organization, and trying to figure out how you kind of keep from dying as an organization, sort of a typical life cycle, you know, of an organization. How do you kind of continue to stay in what they call prime? And so that's honestly something that we're really learning a lot more about right now. And it really is kind of affecting the way we're making decisions and what we're looking at. The other thing, for me, a lot of times I learn by experience. And so it's not always, a who. I like to experiment and try things. So on a personal level, right now I'm trying to learn a lot about VR, virtual reality. And so I have the different Samsung gear goggles, you know, and just trying to contemplate what that would mean as an interface for scripture, what it means as an interface for the church. In fact, right after this, I have a meeting with our team about 360-degree cameras that we're looking at. And so these are the types of things that I enjoy personally, and there's a whole set of them, but that's an example of something right now.
Tom.
I was going to say, before you go out and pick up Managing Corporate Life Cycles, because I picked it up, and I, as you know, if you listen to the podcast regularly, I am a reader. I will go ahead and warn you, it is a textbook. It is not your 180 pages that could really be 160 pages type of book. This is a 400 page barn burner,
and it's only volume 1.
It's not for the faint of heart. And then Barnabas is going to talk about how silly I looked at Catalyst when during a podcast we actually with Charity Water. Oh, I just lost his name.
Scott Harrison.
He had a set of those goggles, and it was one of the craziest experiences of my life. And it was great to see Barnabas catch that on video and post it.
It was awesome. Cool. Yeah. So Scott Harrison, when we had him on, they are looking at how to use virtual reality to draw people into the experience. So Charity Water obviously is trying to
Sure.
Get donors, get supporters to help see the need for people. And so for them, virtual reality is putting people in the experience. And they have this, I think it's like an 8-minute little video, or might even be a little bit shorter than that, where you walk through the life of this little girl and how clean water transforms life. And so that was my first experience seeing how something like that could be used in sort of a ministry and mission context. Have you guys put any sort of thoughts down on paper, just sort of scribbling things out like, hey, we could try this, or what about these kinds of things? What are some of the things you guys are thinking about? Unless, of course, you're not ready to share because you don't want people to poach your ideas.
This thing is top secret here. So no, the truth of the matter is my style is I share any and every idea. It doesn't bother me the least bit if people run with it. We just, you know, right now we're at the earliest stages of it. So we're exploring like what it looks like to have sort of a 360 sort of worship experience. For me, I sort of see VR in its current state as just a really sort of on a very personalized individual level. But if you look at sort of the trajectory of it, I see us being in sort of 360 environments that are like venues, 360 venues. In terms of how I experience things, so I'm kind of looking a little bit beyond where it is today and sort of thinking if you start to have content that surrounds you, what does it look like if you have rooms and things like that, and how's that connect to that? So it's pretty early for us, but we're wanting to, we did a thing called Second Life years ago. It was one of the projects we did. We had a church built in Second Life, and it's a different kind of immersive experience. It's not nearly as cool as VR. But it was a little bit ahead of its time. We were trying to gauge whether it's going to be mainstream or not, and it was a little too early. We had some crazy stories of stuff that happened in our Second Life campus, but it was it was people had interesting avatars. It was the first time we had to deal with a naked lady in the lobby, and all kinds of things.
You say the first time, has that happened more than once?
No, it actually hasn't happened since, but I did get a phone call one time at my house. It was one of our volunteers, and it was at night, and he's like, hey, Bobby, there's a naked lady in the lobby. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, what do we do? I was like, what do you mean, what do we do? So I go and I log in when he explains what it is, I log in, and sure enough, there's like four of our volunteers just standing there staring at her. They don't know what to say or do, and it was the funniest concept. But anyway, that was the kind of world that Second Life was. And the problem with it is it couldn't scale. I mean, we could get 80 people in there and it couldn't really grow it. And so it didn't really, and then the whole platform kind of ended up not working. But anyway, so we're exploring ideas around worship. And on the Bible side of it, it's just more about what does an interface look like to experience scripture in that concept. There's obvious examples of sort of geography and maps and you know, just people experiencing some of the places that scripture's talking about. But then there's other efforts to visualize scripture, you know, with like an audio Bible being read aloud over top. Those efforts so far have not been shot in 360, but the question is, what does it look like if you're standing in that scene and looking in all directions? So we're just, it's pretty early. There's nothing super concrete that we're working on. But we're, like I said, right after this interview, I'm having a conversation about 360 cameras and trying to see what technology we want to go with. So anyway, that's where that's at.
That sounds really interesting. I mean, what you guys have done with YouVersion, just in terms of making scripture interactive in terms of the way that people can engage over it through an app and things like that, is, and making it accessible to so many different people in different languages and all that is remarkable. So to see this as possibly a next step is pretty exciting. And you may have already started to answer our second question, but you could go a totally different direction. And that is, what's the main point of emphasis for your leadership, either for your team or for yourself right now?
You know, right now, what we're focusing on is actually something that people probably presume that we do well, and that is innovation. And what's happened is we have we've had kind of a season in the church where my role in particular was driving a whole bunch of new ideas, new approaches to ministry, church online, the way we give away resources for free, YouVersion, all these things kind of had a season where we were just constantly driving new new ideas. And in order to make that happen back then, and this is 2006, 2007, 2008 timeframe, back then we intentionally structured the team, or I structured the team in such a way that it had to leverage the church, but I had to kind of keep it separate from the operational vortex of the church, because there's just a natural draw to when you've got kind of a larger church or something that's working and growing, it kind of sucks in every resource. And so if we were going to really do something different, we had to kind of shield it and allow it to get its own critical mass or get going. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did. And then all of a sudden some of those things took off, and you know, one of them became YouVersion. We have all these different tools we provide to churches for free, and it's not just a few people that use them. We have, 18,000 churches that use our church online platform, and we have 180,000 church leaders. So over time, these things got some size to them, and we had to then put processes and systems in place to kind of help us steward them well, just be responsible with it. And that makes sense. But what's happened is now those things have their own operational vortex. I mean, YouVersion's, they've got millions of people that are counting on this app working every day. And if there's a problem, you better believe all of our resources are sort of focused on fixing it. Or if we need to move the app forward, we have kind of a whole progression of things we're going to do with it. But if we're going to go try some out there idea like virtual reality, it's really difficult for an idea like that on our YouVersion team to really get the kind of energy that it needs, because you've got all this stuff that you've got to keep paying attention to. Mm-hmm. And so it sounds crazy, but we're actually having to systematically reintroduce how we innovate as an organization, because we sort of pushed that out just by the way things have grown. So that's really the point of emphasis right now for me individually, but also for our leadership team. We're doing it right now by kind of breaking things that are working, by forcing constraints on areas that sort of force innovation to happen. So it's something that, like, maybe it's a process we've used to promote our campuses. We have some certain events we do during the year, and we sort of have kind of grown addicted to promoting them the same way because it works. So we're saying, okay, no, this group of campuses, you can't do this at all. In fact, we're just completely dropping the budget for that, not because we're worried about the budget, but because we want to force a new idea to take place. And so we're kind of reintroducing that culture of experimentation is the best way to describe it.
It's almost like maintaining a startup culture in terms of keeping things lean, even if you have the resources to get fat and happy. Because I feel like that's where the best ideas come from and the most creative ways to do things.
Absolutely. Yeah. We always say, I always tell people, how many of you have been in a meeting where someone says we need to think outside the box? And, generally everyone raises their hand. I've raised my hand because I've said that in meetings in the past. And what I tell them is generally the next idea after someone says that in a meeting, the next idea that comes out of someone's mouth is usually a terrible idea. because we think that the key to great ideas is to remove constraints. Like, that's what we need to do. But I believe that really the best innovation happens inside of constraints. It's kind of thinking inside the box, sort of forcing, forcing us to have some constraints. So sometimes, a lot of times, those constraints are real. Like, organizations, we just don't have the money. Like, if you're a startup, you don't have, 100 people you can throw at something. You've got two. Or you don't have unlimited budgets you can throw at something. You've got just a very shoestring budget. Mm-hmm. So it kind of forces you to create and come up with a different way of approaching or tackling the problem. As you have a larger organization, you've got to put artificial constraints on it. You've got to say, I understand we might have the money to do it, but if we just keep spending money, we're actually not going to innovate. We're just going to buy solutions and right. not actually come up with something different or new. So you're absolutely right. You have to force constraints, both on money, on people, on time, on whatever the resource might be. And we find that is effective. And it becomes hard sometimes to do that consistently. And then I think the other side of what happens is the systems and processes that make you efficient are what a lot of times drives out innovation as well, because it's innovation's not very efficient. It's usually very inefficient.
It's usually sort of a desperation kind of thing. Like, efficiency is based on kind of a lack of desperation. You just have this clean system. Whereas desperation is the kind of thing where what it, I don't, I always forget the phrase, but something is the mother of invention and
necessity.
Necessity, which is also kind of like desperation, where you just have to come up with good ideas, creative ideas, cheaper ideas. So it seems to me like it's not so much thinking outside the box as thinking inside a better box.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. Those constraints, I think, are really a key ingredient to innovation. And so if you don't have any constraints, if you've got every resource you need, you likely are going to be lacking innovation.
Right.
Well, let's talk about some of those constraints in the form of obstacles. Our third question is always, you know, what obstacles are you currently facing? And I feel like, you know, many times in an organization where, you know, some new idea happens is because there's a pretty big problem in front of us and we figure out something new. I mean, you know, in my experience, whenever we would have a problem at one campus and we would solve it, many times it would be a better way to do something and that would end up, you know, happening at other campuses as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, right now for us, I would say our current obstacle is very much tied to what I was just saying. Our current point of emphasis is, which is we're trying to figure out how to make sure that we've got the future in mind with how we're growing. We're growing very quickly, and we're operating very efficiently, and we're, you know, sort of working the model is a good way to describe, you know, like internally, organizationally, what we're doing. And so we added X number, you know, 3 or 4 campuses last year. We sort of have this track we're on. But there's this sense that we could wake up very easily 3 years, 5 years from now, and we've missed kind of where we need to go, like what's new, what needs to happen. And it's hard because you're having to essentially take the autopilot off, you know, things that are working and landing, planes that are landing very on their own. You know, that's the phrase I've been using this last week with the team. We have a campus that we're launching in Overland Park, Kansas. Mm-hmm. And it's really different than anything we've done before. It's actually a fairly significant risk for us. We have a building that's under construction right now. We just moved a team up there and we have no core except for like the families, the team members and their kids and their spouses and just a handful of other people interested. And yet we've got this multi-million-dollar building being built and they've got to sort of go retail, you know, with church planting, in terms of how they're approaching it. And I'm trying to tell our team, this is not the autopilot landing that we typically have for a campus. We have a system and a process and it works and we repeated it. This is new. And we have to be willing to do things for this campus that we haven't done for 24 other ones, you know, and that's hard because the very thing that makes us successful at the one approach is the things that you kind of have to ignore. To do the other. So our obstacle right now is we've got to sort of figure out how to have new approaches and new models to how we're doing ministry. And I think for lack of a better term, the success that we found and growth that we found is really kind of our worst enemy, to how we get there. So the team's responding well. And I think I feel like we have great momentum in this direction I'm talking about. But if I kind of summarize the obstacle, I would say that's one of the key obstacles we have right now.
It's interesting to hear you describe that. I mean, just because it is a response to a criticism that a lot of larger churches get, just in sort of the systematic success kind of thing, where people are like, you know, they just find a formula and they keep doing it and they keep doing it. And it's formulaic. And what you're saying is there are formulas that work. But if you rely on the formulas, they stop working, kind of. It's what it sounds like.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of these things that we have a sense that the formula will work and it's continuing to work, but we have to sort of break away from it. We feel like there's much more that God could do if we sort of figure out how to take different approaches to it. YouVersion would never have happened if we just worked the formula.
Right,
because
right.
it doesn't fit within. It would not have come out of our organization, the formula. So it came out because we decided to take a completely different approach and try something completely different, and that's the kind of thing that and we had a, you know, a whole season of that, and we've had God's continue to bless that in a big way, but at the same time, I don't want to be here 5 years from now talking about the 15-year-old idea or the 10-year-old idea that we did. I would feel like we haven't been great at kind of stewarding the momentum of this and being able to sort of launch new. And I'm wired that way. So yeah. I'm going to always have a bent towards that. But I think organizationally, we're trying to figure out how to make sure that's in proper balance. And it actually even ties back to that Adesis methodology. You're right, it's a heady book and it's a textbook. I mean, there is no cliff notes to the Adesis book because you have to kind of actually read. There's sort of, if you've had cliff notes, it'd probably be bigger to get the cliff notes. But it's figuring out how to have all of the right pieces present kind of in your organization. And we ironically, you know, want to make sure we've got that innovation, that entrepreneurial piece present, even though I think from the outside we're probably viewed as a church that has a lot of that. And in reality, I think it's probably more subdued right now than it needs to be. So anyway.
And I know that Todd and I would love to dig in more on the innovation piece, but in the interest of time and the fact that we don't want to keep you from your innovative meeting, we should probably hit our fourth question. And that is, it's a bit of a turn from what we've been talking about on the organizational side, turning homeward to ask, what does leadership in your home look like?
Right now, it looks like a 2-year-old boy leading the house.
So it's a bit of a tyrant.
We have our house is very lively and something that we feel very, very blessed. We just added on to our house and added some bedrooms onto the house because we had 4 kids, but they all stayed in one room. And so now we built 4 bedrooms, you know, on the house. So they're blessed with these big bedrooms. But the funny thing is all my kids want to stay like in the same bedroom. So we built them their own bedrooms, but they've only known that paradigm. And so they actually have like empty bedrooms now and they're all staying in one. But our 2-year-old, he actually, he pretty well runs the show. You're asking me a serious question. I'm not giving you a serious answer. So.
Oh no. I mean, that context is a serious thing.
But it is true though. My wife, she works, she's had a career now for almost 20 years, and she's been very successful at her career in the oil and gas industry and accounting. And so, you know, right now things are a little bit chaotic, quite honestly, because she has, with what's going on in her industry and layoffs at her job and all this kind of stuff, she's having to work more than she's ever had to work in terms of time and commitment, you know, away from the house into evenings. And it's a really short season for us, but it's kind of an intense season. And so right now we're in that mode where my wife and I are trying to just fight for time together to communicate and to kind of work through where we need to be leading our kids and our house. But it's a time of transition with the new house construction finishing and house opening up, my wife's schedule being crazy, my travel schedule. So we're kind of in a mode right now of just getting through the next month or so. And then we'll be back, I think, to more normal routine and normal season. But we, you know, as a family, my wife and I, we make decisions, you know, most key decisions we make together. We have, you know, very involved kind of in our kids' education and learning process, but we also, have a lot of, you know, her sister and brother, a lot of family engagement. We just really have an emphasis on family. We don't do a lot outside of the house, because I mean, meaning in terms of when we're home, we're usually home every evening. We're home through the weekend. We try to keep our activities, external activities, relatively small so that we can sort of really invest our time together well.
Excellent. Well, I think...
lame answer to your number 4 question you've ever had.
I don't think there are any lame answers to that question, just because I think for listeners hearing how leaders in different contexts lead in their home, I mean, sometimes a normal answer is really refreshing because it reflects the life that most of us lead in terms of like, oh, we just have to balance children and work and faith and all these other things.
Yeah. Real answers are always better than something that sounds contrived. So
Rick Warren told me a long time ago when we were together at something, he was just talking about how we have this tendency to separate our lives into different sections. We have work life and home life and family life and, you know, these kind of segmented lives. And he said that actually leads to a lack of integrity. He said the root word for integrity was like the same thing for like integer or oneness. And when we kind of segment our life in these sections, we tend to be a different person in each of these sections, which makes us kind of essentially at the core definition lacking integrity or oneness. And so he just described to me how you have to figure out how these things all weave together and how you're the same. And so I've kind of taken that to heart. My kids and my wife and my what I do at work and ministry and at home, it is all kind of woven together. It doesn't mean that they don't have focused attention and time. They definitely do. But I try to be the same person, you know, through all of that. And it's, I don't know if that makes any sense, but it did to me at the time that he said it at least.
Well, our last question is definitely one of our favorites, simply because everybody kind of answers this the same way and in a different way at the same time. It's just a weird one. But what would you tell your 20-year-old self about preparing to lead or about leadership?
When I think back to the 20-year-old me, I would say, I would probably tell the 20-year-old self that to not overestimate what God's going to do in the short run, you're probably overestimating what God's going to do in the short run and probably underestimating what he's going to do in the long run. And I think that's probably the perspective I had back then. I was sort of really expecting things to happen faster, like as a leader, but then not ever expecting what God's going to do. You know, it just took more time to get there, but it blew any concept of what I thought would be possible. So that'd be one thing. And trying to think of what else I'd probably tell myself. There's probably a lot of things. The Strengths Finder, Now Discover Your Strengths, that book and the assessment, that was probably one of the most profound things that helped me. And if I could have gone back in time and had the 20-year-old version of me go through that, I would have saved myself a lot of pain.
What's your, I'm sorry, forgive me all the listeners, but I got to know, what's your top five?
So my top five are competition. That's number one, because if you have competition and it's not number one, you don't have competition. So there's competition, ideation, activator, futurist, and achiever. So those are my top five.
Goodness. Cool. You're a freight train.
There's none
of freight train.
None of that.
I'm a strategic maximizer, activator, ideation, and command.
There you go.
So it's it's a lot of fun. Are you an ENTP on a Myers-Briggs?
I am an ESTJ, but the last three are actually, the last two I've pretty much tied or been like almost back and forth between T and F and J and P.
Sorry for nerding out, everyone. My bad. No problem.
Well, it wouldn't be the Five Leadership Questions podcast if there wasn't a moment of nerdery mixed in somewhere. So,
and I'm sorry I made no obscure sports references this time.
Well, Bobby, we know you have to run, and we would love to chat with you further. We might try to set up another conversation with you to talk about innovation and things like that. That's a piece of the conversation that I would love to dig into more when we have more time. So thank you for making the time today to jump on with us.
Guys, I really appreciate it. Thanks for letting me be a part.
Absolutely. And for you listeners, you can find out more about what Life Church is doing and what Bobby is part of there at lifechurch.tv. You can go into the App Store on your mobile device and get the YouVersion app. It is a fantastic way to interact with Scripture for Bible reading during the sermon at your church, just whenever you need to look something up and just begin to explore that a little bit. So again, lifechurch.tv or the YouVersion app. Thanks so much for listening, everybody, and tune in next time.
Thank you for listening to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. Before you go, we wanted to remind you about the free e-booklet, Developing Your Leadership Pipeline, that will help your church get started training leaders more effectively. To download, go to lifeway.com/churchleaders and select the free e-booklet tab at the top. Again, that's lifeway.com/churchleaders and select the free e-booklet tab, where you can download the e-booklet for free.